This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Chat Podcast. I'm your host Elliot Jackson and alongside me as always is fellow Network Desk writer for Reach PLC, George Smith. How are you doing, George?
I'm not bad, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. No Tom this week, unfortunately, with work, and he's currently at Bramall Lane watching Sheffield United nil, Chelsea nil as we record. So that's just myself and George on this week's pod, but we do have a special guest joining us in a little while. So quick reminder that you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at ChampChatPod, and make sure to subscribe through your preferred provider to get the latest episode for free every single week. In today's pod, we're joined by Kirk from Cherry's Red Army after Bournemouth sacked Jason Tindall this week. We'll also be reviewing Millwall's first home victory since October as they beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-1, while Swansea City came out on top in the battle for automatic promotion against Norwich City.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
We'll start our weekend analysis at the Vitality Stadium after Bournemouth parted company with Jason Tindall following a fourth straight defeat against Sheffield Wednesday. The Cherries' last-minute defeat saw Tindall's reign brought to a premature end. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by Kirk from the Cherries Red Army, Cherries Red Academy, to discuss all the fallout. Kirk, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's the Cherries Red Army YouTube channel.
No, really, really good to have you on this week. Really appreciate it. Tindall gone, obviously, and about a month ago, I look a bit silly now, I gave him quite a bit of praise, actually, on the pod with you guys, sat second. It seemed everything was going down quite well, at least results-wise. I know that some of the performances weren't ideal, but there's just been a massive drop-off in form. Obviously, you lost four in a row, no wins in five league outings. What's the big thing you would pinpoint that's gone wrong in this last sort of run of results?
I think that teams worked us out. Our squad at the start of the season was just hitting the ground running, and with the talent we had, we were winning football matches. I think if you were to ask our fan base, you could probably count on one hand matches we've actually won and played well for 90 minutes. But apart from that, we've won games we've actually playing poorly, especially in first halves. And what eventually happened coming into January is it all caught up with Jason Tindall, and he seemed to struggle tactically to break football teams down and ultimately get us points.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. And do you think it's any surprise, really, that Tindall's gone after his first real bad run in of form? Because we've seen, you know, I come back to something that Jamie Carragher said about Frank Lampard a few months ago on Monday Night Football now. And these young managers, when they come in, they don't have the experience to draw back on previous bad spells to then, you know, bring a resurgence in form. So it seems not much of a surprise that young manager first stint as a number one, and he's not been able to turn it around when they've had the first real dip in form.
Yeah, a bit of a split between the fan base when Jason Tindall was given the job. It seemed like an easy option to me for the board to hand it to Jason Tindall. It meant that the actual backroom staff wasn't disrupted by that move. But ultimately, Jason Tindall never really had the CV to take on the squad of players and talent that was in there. Yes, they underperformed last season, but if we had the right man come in and take those players and bring back some confidence, we should really have been dominating this championship. And as I said, I think Tindall never really had the tactical intelligence for 46 games. And that was my feeling back in August, September when they gave him the job. And it sort of played out like that as we got to January.
You mentioned there about obviously Jason Tindall being a young, inexperienced manager. It was his first time as a number one. So looking forward now, obviously, at the moment, it seems that the club are in no rush to get that next person. Do you think it's a case of going for a young upcoming manager once again, or do they need a more experienced head? Like, looking at the odds at the minute, Frank Lampard's up there, obviously, being at Chelsea, didn't quite work out, but still got a lot to give. Or do you think it's somebody like a Paul Cook or a Tony Pulis type that Bournemouth need at this moment in time?
Yeah, so when we go back to when Eddie actually walked away, they had an opportunity to go in a different direction from the era we had just had, a historical era, going all the way to the Premier League. And Jason Tindall was part of that, being Eddie's right-hand man. Maybe the timescale between the season finishing and the new season starting was why they went with Jason Tindall. But they're now in a position they didn't really interview or have a proper process in place when Jason Tindall was given the job. And I think now they recognise they can't make that same mistake again. So they have said that due diligence will be done, a proper process will go in place, and they'll get the right man. And Woodgate is sitting as caretaker manager at the moment. A difficult one for me, because I'm not actually pinpointing myself who I really want. They could go for someone like John Terry, Frank Lampard, someone that the players will look up to in, and be inspired by, you know, players that have played at the top level of football in internationally, Champions League finals, got their coaching badges at the start, wanting to prove something in their career. Or they could go for someone who's established, got teams out of this division before. And that could be someone like Rafa Benitez, Nigel Pearson. Could also be people like Bilic, Jukanovic. The problem I have with those types of managers is if they do succeed and get us into the Premier League, is then I'm not sure they can push us on, because they seem to struggle in their previous jobs where then when they have got teams promoted.
Who would you like then? You just said you've not pinpointed. Have you not worked that quite out yourself with so many people in the running, or where are your thoughts with it personally?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty open with our fan base. I never hid away from it. Jason Tindall was never my man from the start. But I was pushing towards like a Frank Lampard and John Terry back in August, September. Now I'm sitting here thinking, I think I'm still in that place, but it is a bigger risk now because we have to get back to the Premier League. A lot of fans realise that we're not as big as some other clubs that have dropped down divisions, League One. You look at West Ham's, Leeds, you can look at those types of teams. Southampton have even been there, but they've got the structure and they've got everything in place to bounce back. We haven't. We're sort of living off the parachute payments from the Premier League. If we don't bounce back in our first season, it's going to become very difficult and could be a long way back for us. And we could ultimately end up back in League One as a mid-table team in 5, 6, 7 years. So do you get someone in who you can trust and has done it before? But I'm sort of pushing towards someone who's showing a bit of ambition, someone who could maybe be like a Steven Gerrard and show what they're all about. And hopefully the players will look up to him and be inspired and bring some confidence back to the team.
Yeah, it's really, really an interesting one. It's also interesting thrown in with obviously Jonathan Woodgate going in only a couple of weeks ago. Now they've said it'll be an external appointment, but you wonder if his name might have been in the running had he not joined the club. And we know what boardrooms are like as well. If they string two or three wins together, then it's quite easy for the easier decision to be with Woodgate. Are you concerned that the board could do that, given what they did with Jason Tindall?
A really weird set of circumstances. Graham Jones went out the week before. They brought in Jonathan Woodgate on the Monday. Jason Tindall loses another match at home on the Tuesday and sacked. What that tells me was that Jason Tindall was hanging on by one game in whether he was still left in a job. If that was the case, why would you let Jason Tindall, if Jason Tindall had the decision to bring in a man to be in his backroom staff, if he was living off one game? Which again highlights, was it a board decision to bring in Woodgate as a backup if it did go wrong?
You'd think if they bring a new man in, they might want their own backroom staff and then they might have to pay off Woodgate. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense, as you said.
Which is the weird circumstances, because like you've just pointed out there, if they let go of Tindall and a new man comes in like Frank Lampard and he wants to bring Jody Morris and all his ex-Chelsea backroom staff, then Jonathan Woodgate comes in, goes out, and I'm sure that's a financial cost to the club. So a really weird set of circumstances. Woodgate, not the man for me again initially. A man that's had minimal coaching experience, probably no better than Tindall. Had 1 year at Middlesbrough, 41 games, 9 wins, and I think they were the lowest goal scorers in that Championship season, and Middlesbrough didn't even get relegated. With the team that we have and the squad of players we have, we need to be using our attacking team and winning football matches instead of trying to set up defensively to sort of stop teams scoring against us. Woodgate did well on Saturday. He got the result. That was his remit. The concern is that if he wins a couple more matches, they might just go, do you know what? Let's just give him the job until the end of the season. But I don't think it's the right appointment.
No, I think I've got with you on that one. I don't think, even though obviously Jonathan Woodgate had a very big task on his hands when he stepped in at Middlesbrough, obviously had to completely change the style. Personally, I think it would be better to go for a fresher outlook on that. But obviously yesterday against Birmingham, he went a little bit more attack-minded with the 4-3-3 system, and it certainly paid dividends, arguably, obviously riding one or two storms at times, but seems to be a lot more attacking threat and a lot more impetus. Is that what the team have lacked this season, the desire and the cohesion to open teams up and have a go? Because I've seen Bournemouth once this season properly when they came to Hillsborough to face Sheffield Wednesday. And being honest, they were really, really surprised me how lackluster they were going forward. So do you think it's a case of whoever does come in, they've got to stick with this more attacking impetus to give these players that you've got the chance to do what they can do?
So ultimately, Tindall's downfall was that he never really set on a formation and he never really worked out what his strong 11 was. He started the season against Blackburn playing a 3-4-3 and we won 3-2. And we sort of went like that, winning most games, outscoring teams. Then we hit a bit of a stumbling block at Sheffield Wednesday, where we lost 1-0 and they frustrated us. And he then changed the formation up. And every time we lost a match, he sort of went, he filtered between a back three and a back four, playing 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2. Then he went with a 4-3-3 and a 4-4-2. What suddenly started to appear was that teams weren't going toe to toe with us like they were at the start of the season. And if teams go toe to toe with us, they're going to lose, because we will hurt them, because we've got talent like Solanke, like Dan Juma, and we can sort of go from back to front and hurt teams 3-on-3. But what a lot of teams have done, and teams that have beaten us, and they're generally down the bottom of the league, they've just taken a 20-yard step off us, and they've just said, come on then, break us down. And we haven't had that answer, and Tindall didn't have that answer, and our football and our passing become very lacklustre. We would dominate a lot of football matches. If you look at our previous matches, we'd finished a game on 61-65%, but creating barely any chances. And that's where we were losing games to Luton 1-0, Preston we lost to, and obviously we lost a lot of matches in January.
I think that segues... Oh, sorry, George.
No, go on, Elliot, you go, honestly.
I think that segues quite nicely, actually, into what you were saying about a lack of almost creativity against the low blocks, against the deeper teams, because obviously you've signed Jack Wilshere. He set up the first goal, obviously scored as well and scored a nice header, but I think the first goal sort of summed up for me a little bit what Bournemouth have missed between the lines a little bit at times this season. Quick feet, being a midfielder able to beat his man and then slip Dan Juma through, and it's a fantastic finish, obviously, and a great goal. But having someone with those fast feet, I mean, you look at the makeup of your midfield you've got available to you, Lerma and Cook. Cook obviously is a good passer of the ball, but from deeper areas rather than between the lines in the number 10 area. Philip Billing, again, is more box to box. He's not particularly someone that a creative sort of player. Lerma, now you sound Ben Pearson as well. So I think Wilshere's just something a little bit different for that squad. We've seen him play deeper, obviously, in the Premier League for Arsenal, but I think as sort of the most advanced of your midfield three, if you are going to play 4-3-3, when you've got Dan Juma running off the left, Solanke with his pace, Brooks off the right, he seems to be that little bit of a player that you've been missing and what you've needed in advanced areas.
And when you've got a player like Jack Wilshere, probably one of the best talents that England have had on his day when he's fit, as you said, we just weren't utilising those players that we've had, Brooks, Dan Juma, Wilshere, and what we were doing was being too predictable, playing everything in front. And a lot of our back four or back three was eating up the possession. There was one match where I think that in the first half we had our back three had about over 100 passes between them. When you've got someone like Dan Juma, who's had 14 touches in one half, which is just not good enough. The difference yesterday was he played Lerma and Lewis Cook in a two. So he played a 4-2. And then he had three in Dan Juma, Brooks and Wilshere ahead with Shane Long up top. But what we were looking to do was to play that ball between the lines. And that's where the first goal came from. Wilshere picked it up. Then he was able to feed Dan Juma. And where Dan Juma's a threat is when he gets one-on-one. And he's done that. He scored against Bristol City, pretty similar. Those goals, he does them all the time. He gets one-on-one with someone, ducks to dive left, goes right, and then he just curls it in, a bit of finesse. But we weren't doing that through January, and we weren't getting those players in those areas, and we just couldn't work it out, and Tindall couldn't work it out, and that cost him his job.
Yeah, we spoke about some of the problems at the back end of the pitch, at the top end of the pitch, but also there's been some problems defensively as well. And interesting thing for me, we named our EFL team of the season so far, not EFL, Championship, should I say, probably about a month ago now, start of January, when we had the FA Cup third round. And I put Begovic in goal, and I thought he'd been really good. He came in from the cold, obviously, had a couple of loan spells, not involved under Eddie Howe at the back end, come in, done really well. And then he's had a couple of howlers in the last 2 weeks. Obviously, he didn't cover himself in glory at Reading with the free kick that he parried for Reading's second goal, and the mistake at the weekend as well. That was even worse for Scott Hogan to open the scoring. So obviously he's had a dip in form, but generally speaking, even so, of the top six, only Reading have conceded more than the 28 that Bournemouth have got. Has again, there's been a little bit too much of the chopping and changing from a back three to a back four. You know, consistency. You think of all the best teams defensively, whether it's in the Premier League or the Championship or whatever, consistency is key at the back. And would you say that's been a major downfall to some of those goals Bournemouth have conceded?
Definitely. And when you say about that back three, he had alternated playing Rico in that back three, who's naturally a left back. Then he would go to left wing back. Then he had played Kelly in a three of the centre backs. Then he would go out to left back because it weren't working. And then he'd bring Mepham in, and then he'd take Mepham out. And then he'd play Carter Vickers, and then Cook would always be there. I mean, Begovic resurrected his career. No one saw this coming. When he came back, we didn't even think he'd be, you know, staying. Travers had a bit of a disaster on the opening day of the season. So Begovic came in as a sort of someone who could maybe settle the squad down into the next game. And he was brilliant. He was back to his old self. And to be fair to Begovic, he had a spell where he had five clean sheets. And he was one of our leaders up there with Steve Cook. And at the time, Lewis Cook, one of our best players of the season. But with Begovic and goalkeepers, they have got mistakes in them. I do feel that our defence will always put pressure on our goalie, so there's probably going to be a mistake. If you look back to Sheffield Wednesday, which was Jason's last game in charge, Mepham negatively received the ball and wanted to go back towards Begovic instead of turning out. That ended up giving it to the striker of Sheffield Wednesday, I think it was Patterson, and he put it away. But we've done that a lot. The other weakness that we have massively is we're not very good aerially. If you look at games like Rotherham, where we played away, they bullied us all day. And they just battled through. And the goals we've conceded from balls just lofted in the box or set pieces is just too many. I think we drew at home again. Can't think of the team now, but it was a last minute sort of equaliser. And it was, again, just a long ball hoofed in and we don't win the first one. And we don't react to second balls. And that was Reading as well, not reacting to second ball and rebounds.
And I suppose, obviously, with the situation that you're in now, obviously no manager in, doesn't really show any signs of who it could be, when it could be. We put this question to everybody that comes on our podcast to wrap up this segment. And we want to know, ideally, where do you think you will finish the season? Obviously, it looks like, well, ultimately the top two is gone now. It's a gap of 14 points. Do you think you've got enough to maintain that top six charge? You've got a 5-point gap on Middlesbrough in seventh at the minute, but does it all depend on who comes in and what the next few games brings?
On paper, this team should be in the top two, in my opinion. The squad, the talent on its day. Eddie Howe left and that did hurt the team, and there was a lot of players in there that have been under the Eddie Howe regime. It'll be an absolute disaster if we don't finish in the top six. I think the automatics we can't think about. We have to take one game at a time at the moment. We've struggled to beat any team in the Championship in the last month. So no games are given and the Championship needs to be respected, obviously. We have to get playoffs. The club needs to go up. For the stability of the football club in the future, we have to get to the Premier League. So we need to get to that playoff final. It is a one-off match on its day. But let's think no further. I think we've created a bit of distance over the weekend between us and seventh in Middlesbrough. I'd be shocked if we don't finish in the top six, but there's some good teams above us that have played well. We've come up against Reading, Brentford, Swansea look a good outfit. And Norwich, I think, will be up there. I don't think they're always the best football team on their day, but they got the points and they clearly deserve that.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think I would echo what you've said there in that I would be shocked if Bournemouth didn't finish in the top six. I think it's looking like a three-way battle with Norwich, Brentford and Swansea for those top two spots. And I think Reading and Watford are definitely catchable for Bournemouth. I think Bournemouth are a better side than Watford, actually. I would go as far to say that. And probably Reading, actually, I would agree with that. It's just been a bad run of form. So I definitely think a top six spot is there. It'd be interesting to see which of those top three I've just mentioned does miss out, potentially. But then again, this is the Championship. We could have a Villa situation from 2 years ago where someone comes and puts a 10-game winning run together to break in. Kirk, it's been fantastic having you on this week's pod. Thank you for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
Millwall secured their first home victory since October as they came from a goal behind to beat Sheffield Wednesday 4-1 at the Den. A penalty from Kenneth Zahor brought the Lions level before half-time, and then spectacular goals from Scott Malone and Ben Thompson put them 3-1 ahead before Tom Bradshaw deflected Romeo's goal for a fourth in stoppage time. Interesting game this one, George. Millwall were definitely the second best up until the half-hour point. The game, you know, games change on key moments sometimes, and it seems a bit obvious to point out, you know, a key incident that changes it, but the game absolutely swung on Millwall's penalty. Stonewall penalty as Joey Pelupessi brought down the Millwall attacker, which has lost my mind for a brief moment. Brought him down. Stonewall penalty. He did slip by the looks of it, Pelupessi, but he's brought him down. Stonewall penalty, and he just gave them all the momentum. Wednesday dominated the first half an hour or so of the game, scored through Callum Patterson after great work from Elias Kachunga, or as the EFL on Quest commentator said, Tom Lees. Similar players, Kachunga and Lees, renowned for their pace. It did amuse me, that one. But yeah, Patterson sticks it away. Pelupessi brings it down 1-0 at half time, and Wednesday imploded second half. For Millwall, though, focusing on them, because obviously their first home win, it's only the second home win all season and the first since October. So some stat, I know the home form's fallen off a cliff, but, you know, October's a long time to go without a home victory. But strong second half for them. Four different goal scorers as well, which has been a big problem for them, getting goals and four different players on the score sheet. Two very eye-catching goals as well from Scott Malone, or Malone Dino, as I called him on our podcast Twitter. And Ben Thompson with a cross-come shot, which deceived Kieran Westwood.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right where you said at the start of that for the first half an hour, Sheffield Wednesday were the side in control. If anybody had told you that Wednesday were going to lose that game 4-1 at that stage, you'd have laughed at them, because Wednesday were well on top. They could have had two or three by that stage. And then in the blink of an eye, Joey Pelupessi, unfortunately, I must say, he's given the penalty away. He has slipped, I think, as he's tried to recover the ball, but that's given Millwall all the momentum. You get to half-time and you think, right, this game could go either way. Still, there's a long way to go. But second half, Wednesday, just they didn't threaten at all. Millwall were just relentless in their attacks, and they got their just deserves. They could have had even more if it wasn't for Kieran Westwood with a couple of smart stops. But like you say, Scott Malone, brilliant individual goal from him. And then literally before the dusters had time to settle and give Wednesday a chance to try and give it any hope of getting back into the game, Ben Thompson somehow has squeezed it in for 3-1. With an exceptional finish, you must say. It was a brilliant goal. But for Gary Rowett, that is such a huge lift, because they've been really poor at home this season for Millwall standards. As everybody always says about the Den, it's arguably one of the hardest places to go in the Championship. And they this season at home, they've just looked so off the pace. They've not scored goals. But you'd like to think maybe in midweek it was a turning point, because they got a very respectable point off Norwich at home, a 0-0 draw, a clean sheet. It's a building block to build upon. But yesterday, first half, you would not have seen that coming what the game ended. But second half, take nothing away from Millwall. They were brilliant. They were relentless in their pressing. They wanted to get the ball forward as quickly and as often as they could. And they were really, really good. You can't deny it. Sheffield Wednesday were poor in the second half, and that certainly made life easier for Millwall. But take nothing away from Gary Rowett's side. They fully deserved that yesterday based on that second half performance. And for them, they've now got to use that as a catalyst to kick on and try and recover what's left of the season. Because realistically, for where they were last season, and certainly in the second half of the season, and Gary Rowett, they should be doing better this season, because they've recruited reasonably well. Zahor, for a club like Millwall, I think it's a decent addition. He's obviously struggled with injuries, but he got his goal yesterday. And if he can start finding the back of the net, that's only going to be a boost for them moving forward.
Yeah, as we say, they've got some quite, well, they are the draw specialist. I think they've drawn almost half of their games, if not all of them already, 14 draws or something like that already this season, which is ridiculous. And we know that they can defend. So, you know, it wasn't the greatest shock in the world. They got a 0-0 with Norwich, an Emi Buendia-less Norwich as well, I might add in that. So they are a good side, but they've just not had any potency going forward, no creativity. Troy Parrott just didn't work out in the slightest. He's obviously been recalled and been sent out on loan to Ipswich now. But you look at their options up front. Zahor's obviously the one they put the money in terms of wages in the summer. He's had injury problems. Bradshaw's been in and out of the team, although I would argue he might be their most natural goal scorer. Bob Varson's limited. He's a bit of a lump. He's got his uses from the bench, certainly, and in the air, but He's got his limitations, as does Matt Smith, although Matt Smith had a good season last year, to be fair to him. But there's only 7 points. It's so tight at the bottom of the mini draws. This is the thing, because no one's safe even in mid-table, because up until before the weekend, obviously Sheffield Wednesday were in good form and kept winning, one at Bournemouth in midweek. Rotherham keep winning. They're in fantastic form as well. QPR are winning. Birmingham are dropping like a stone a little bit. But there's only 7 points between Millwall now in 13th and Birmingham in 22nd, who are at third bottom. So given the rate that teams are winning at the bottom and Millwall's form prior to this game, this is a huge win for them. And as I say, getting people on the score sheet was massive. They've got Reading next up, which will be tricky. But after that, they've got really winnable games, or games they'll expect to certainly compete in. They've got Birmingham, Wickham and Luton in the next three after Reading. Really, really big chances to build some momentum and completely clear themselves of any relegation scrap they could get dragged into.
You're absolutely right. And I think, obviously, scoring 4 goals at home and getting a win like that is gonna force people to take notice of you just that little bit more, rather than a 1-0 or whatever. But in fairness to Millwall, after a pretty tricky patch, they have only lost one of the last 6 games. So you would like to think they've turned a corner. Admittedly, there has been 4 draws in that run. So, yeah, that's fair enough. But they've took points in the last 6 from Bournemouth, Watford, Norwich. They've taken points off good teams that are fighting for promotion. So they are improving and they are heading in the right direction. But to have scored 4 at home and get your biggest win of the season, just when the gap was starting to decrease and you're starting to look over your shoulder just that little bit. I don't anybody thinks that Millwall are going to be in trouble come the end of the season, because they shouldn't be unless anything disastrous happens. But just to get that win, it's going to give them that little bit of breathing space now. And like you say, they've got some, if there is such a thing in the Championship, they've got some favourable fixtures coming up after the Reading game. It's a chance for Gary Rowett to get his players on board, get them moving in the right direction. And the amount of confidence they will have taken from that win yesterday to have scored 4 goals is going to be enormous for them. So they're going to be looking to push on now, push forward. And like you say, just make themselves safe once and for all. I don't think they will go down. I think there's far many teams down there that are worse than Millwall. I think they'll be fine. So it's all about for them now, just literally getting to the finish line. If I say getting to the finish line, there's still about 19 games to go, whatever it is I'm saying that. But they'll be fine. They've got a good side. They work hard. They don't concede all that many. So for them, I think now it's just a case of kicking on and just trying to be the best that they can be.
Yep, I would agree with a lot of that sentiment. And I think Millwall will always compete in games, absolutely. So it makes no surprise to me, again, that they've taken some good points off the top teams. But it's, have they got the individual quality to go and win those games against the bottom clubs? And it's wins that keeps you up against the teams. I know, again, they're not in a relegation fight, but it is win. You need wins at the bottom. Draws will only get you so far against teams in and around you, other than for the top, against the top 10 or the top 6. You need wins, really. Or certainly to pick up your fair share. And Millwall weren't doing that. Big win against a team that obviously they want to finish above in Sheffield Wednesday. And for them, it's been a good run of form under Neil Thompson, but a bad day at the office, as there was at Coventry a fortnight ago. As we said, it all went wrong from Pellepesi's foul, the penalty given. And second half, just a massive collapse. Do you think it's a bit harsh to say that I think Kieran Westwood should have done a little bit better for the second and the third goal, perhaps? Albeit, I would caveat that with, he pulled off a fantastic save at 1-0. That header from Sean Hutchinson, I think it was, and that was goal-bound, and that should have been a goal. Fantastic save from Westwood, saves them a goal there. But I think, although the build-up for Scott Malone's goal is sensational, the actual volley itself, he gets a decent hand on it, and it's at his body. So I wonder if he could have got a stronger right hand to that and turned it around the post. And the third one, I don't know, I'm not a goalkeeper. Maybe it's just unlucky, but you've always got to question a goalkeeper's positioning when one floats over the head like that. Then again, he may have been anticipating the cross. I'm not a goalkeeping expert by any means, so maybe I'm being a bit harsh there. What do you think?
No, I think I echo that entirely. Kieran Westwood, we know he's, for his age now, and to be fair, the amount of time he didn't play, he's still a very, very good goalkeeper at this level. And yeah, I can see where you're coming from for the Scott Malone goal. Maybe he should do better. But in fairness to Scott Malone, it's a terrific, terrific build-up play. And the strike's not the cleanest. But was he unsighted through bodies? Did he misjudge it? He may have. I don't know. The third one for the Ben Thompson goal, I think it's just one of those where you are anticipating, because everybody inside the ground would have been expecting the cross. And he's just found that gap between the near post and the crossbar, and it's gone in. So in that sense, Kieran Westwood will be disappointed, but it happens. It's football at the end of the day. It does happen on days like that. And that's what it was for Sheffield Wednesday. It was a day like that. The first half, apart from probably the last 10 minutes of the first half, you couldn't fault what Wednesday had done. They clearly got the tails up after the last minute winner at Bournemouth in midweek. And then second half, it was almost like Neil Thompson had gone back into the dressing room with 11 players and come back out with 11 different ones that he'd never seen before. It was the complete polar opposite. It was really, really surprising, because at 1-1 at half-time, you thought, yeah, we've had a bit of a setback at half-time, but this game's here to be won. Millwall haven't really done a lot to cause us problems. And then it's just, like I said, a complete collapse. And it is alarming, because we saw that at Coventry only a week last Tuesday, where Wednesday did collapse again. And it's just, the biggest problem is with this Wednesday team is the inconsistency, because when they're up and at it, they can be a good side, they can hurt teams, but they so easily fold and fall under pressure. And that is the concern, but I don't think you can pin the blame on that for Neil Thompson at all. It's been the mentality of the squad has been an issue for several years now. It's been something that's been well addressed by quite a few managers, to be fair. Gary Monk said it, Tony Pulis had obviously hinted at it. So, yeah, yesterday was a very disappointing outcome, but in the bigger picture, in the grand scheme of things, taking into account all the off-field situations with pay, no new signings coming in on deadline day, the manager situation, only Brentford and Swansea have taken more points than this Wednesday team in the last 8 games. And that does speak volumes about the way that they have responded to Neil Thompson's method since Tony Pulis left about 5-6 weeks ago. So to be in a position where only Brentford and Swansea have taken more points speaks volumes about the grit and the character this squad can deliver when they put the mind to it. So, yeah, the Millwall game, excuse me, was very disappointing. There's no doubt about that. But as Wednesday have proven, they have got the ability to bounce back from disappointments. They did it last weekend against Preston after the defeat to Coventry. But obviously, we're recording on Sunday evening. And on Tuesday night, Wednesday have got what can only be described as an absolute must-win game at home to Wickham Wanderers, which, in fairness, is just as big a game, if not even bigger, to Wickham, because if they fail to win that, it probably is all over for them. So it's a huge game for both teams. But as we've seen in recent weeks, Wednesday have been pretty good at home. They've won 4 on the trot. If they win on Tuesday night, it'll be the first time they've managed to win 5 at home in 10 years on the trot. So the record is there to be broken. And it is a game, realistically, that Wednesday should be winning. But they can't, say if they suffer a setback on Tuesday night, they can't fold and collapse like they did at Millwall yesterday. They've got to keep going. They've got to keep the foot to the floor. But for Neil Thompson, I think overall, since he's come in the situation he's working in, not been able to realistically bring any of his own players in, because obviously Sam Hutchinson, I think that's clearly a boardroom decision to bring him back. Andre Green, he may have had a say in it, but may have had a say in it, I should say. And I think that's probably one that's been touted for a while. So
I think they both were.
Without being able to bring his own players in, and what he's, even though he has been working with this group of players for a long, long time, because he's been at the football club many years, I think he can be very pleased with what he's achieved, because I go back to the original point. At the end of the day, the stats don't lie. In the last 8 games, only Brentford and Swansea have taken more points than this Wednesday team in the last 8 games.
So with so much uncertainty around the club at the moment, in terms of cash flow, which we know is a massive problem under Dave Ponchansiri, with a lack of alternative candidates seemingly fitting the profile for the club, for whatever reason, we all know my thoughts on this. That should be Paul Cook should have been signed, sealed and delivered a long time ago. Clearly that's not happening, so there's no point harping on about it as I'm doing now. Do you think it's a case of giving him the job till the end of the season at this point? I think it's a popular option amongst all the fans. I'm always wary of it because, you know, as we said with Kirk not that long ago, he hasn't got that experience if things are going wrong to draw on past experiences as a young in his managerial career if he was to take the number one job. And obviously, if it's going wrong at Wednesday, they go down. So it's high pressure stakes. But at the minute, with a little alternatives, and obviously the uncertainty is helping no one really, although the results aren't bad, but it just doesn't help anyone. And the anxiety levels for fans, for the players, I imagine, for the club in general. If you were Dave Ponchansiri now, would you just make that decision?
Well, I think overall you've got to look at the picture inside the last week, because I think for the first time in quite a long time after the win at Bournemouth on Tuesday night, obviously everyone was upbeat, last minute winner. It was kind of the best feel good factor you'd felt around the club for quite a few months, and everyone were like, got to give it Neil Thompson to the end of the season, at least he deserves. We're on track, we're gonna get out of this. And then by 10-5 yesterday, Neil Thompson's got to go. He's the worst man ever to have graced the club. Football fans of all clubs just demand success every single weekend. They want to win every game. Everybody does. But in this division, it's not going to happen. So based on your question of what should Wednesday do, I think overall in what Neil Thompson's done since he took over from Tony Pulis, the positives outweigh the negatives by 1,000%. He's united the team. He's got them winning football matches. Admittedly, there's been a couple of disappointing defeats at Coventry and yesterday to Millwall. But what team doesn't lose games in this league? Everybody does. Every team hits setbacks. It happens. Norwich are currently on a bit of a blip at the moment, but I'm sure they'll get back doing what they do. So for me, I just think Deipon Chansiri is clearly in no rush to appoint a manager. The reporters saw that managers that he's spoken to, it's literally he's told them up front, I only want to bring you in till the end of the season on a short-term basis. Not many managers are going to want to do that with the pressure that they're going to be under in this job. So for me, as I posted on social media after the Bournemouth game, I think it is time to give Neil Thompson an opportunity for the rest of the season. But do Wednesday just keep going on as they are with continuing the manager search saying nothing, or do they just come out categorically say in a statement, we are going to give the job to Neil Thompson for the rest of the season and we will make a permanent appointment ahead of the 2021-22 season, regardless of what league they're in. For me, I think Neil Thompson's a crack at the whip to have a go for the rest of the season at the very least. And to be fair, Wednesday have been in this situation before where a caretaker manager's impressed in Stuart Gray. Obviously, he took over from Dave Jones, did well in about, I think it was about 11 or 12 games in caretaker charge, and Milan Mandrić said, right, I've seen what I want to see. I'm going to give it him on a full-time basis. And let's be honest, Stuart Gray did a fantastic job with the money that he had. And it was quite unfortunate that Deipon Chansiri didn't pull the trigger when he did, even though it probably turned out to be the right decision back in June 2015. So for me, Neil Thompson, I've seen enough from him to suggest that he deserves a chance for the rest of the season at the very least.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
We'll round off this weekend's action with Friday night's game as Swansea City strengthened their hopes of automatic promotion with a 2-0 win over Norwich City. An error from Tim Krul allowed Andre Ayew to open the scoring before a rocket from Conor Hourihan sealed all 3 points. Really impressive victory for Swansea this. Very eye-catching win as well. And unsurprisingly, 2-0 to the Swans. That's how it goes in the Championship this season. There hasn't been a more regular scoreline, as we've said a few times on this pod, the most regular scoreline in the entire EFL. 2-0 to Swansea City. So just a fantastic win for them. And so good defensively once again. I know Norwich were missing Emi Buendia. And as I say, they gifted the opener to Swansea. But this is just a team that you cannot go behind against because that you just won't get back into the game. They're so good defensively that when they do take a 1-0 lead, they can hold teams out. And then they've got the potency and the firepower to go and add a second. And that's why they win 2-0. And it was no different on Friday night.
No, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, I didn't manage to see the game in full because I was working. And I really actually wanted to watch it because I thought it was going to be a really good contest. But I've seen the highlights and I've seen what Swansea did. And it was nothing more than what they deserved. The first goal, they've had a helping hand from Tim Krul, a bit of a mistake on his part. But you can't take anything away from the second strike, the Conor Hourihan goal, who I must say, what an impact he's had since coming in. He's been absolutely outstanding. Which you'd expect him to be. It's an unbelievable goal. So much precision and accuracy on the shot. So for me, he could be the difference between them getting in the playoffs and getting automatic promotion this season. But I genuinely think that Swansea now, for me personally, I honestly believe that they are becoming quite possibly the most attractive team to watch in the league. I'm really, really enjoying from what I'm seeing from them. And Steve Cooper, we've spoke about it many, many times on this podcast. We spoke about it with Tom, the Swansea fan, last week, just saying about what an unbelievable job he has done at that club. And let's be honest, if they do get promoted this season, which for me, I think they've got a very, very good chance of doing that. I think they're going to be a hard unit to stop between now and May. I think they've got the potential to really enjoy a long, lucrative success with Steve Cooper at the helm. I think he's a fantastic guy, fantastic manager. And like you say, not just only are they winning games and scoring goals, they barely concede either. It's unbelievable. Freddie Woodman has now kept 17 clean sheets this season in all competitions, 14 in the Championship. It's unbelievable. It's an absolutely superb record that Freddie Woodman has got between the sticks. And for me, he's been one of Swansea's standout players, and that's all when your goalkeeper's chipping in and having such an important factor. But overall, absolutely superb. For me, I know there's a long way to go, but I think it will be them and Brentford that occupy them top two positions come the end of the season.
It's a big shout, that. Obviously, Tom did say the same last week, actually. And I've not really even considered it before last week, before Tom said it, and it caught me off guard a little bit. And the more I've looked at the league table and the more I've looked, I know Norwich are without a winning three, and we'll come on to them shortly, but I do see what you mean. I mean, Brentford, we know the run they're on, it's extraordinary. They're just not losing, they're just winning, and they've got so much firepower, so they're winning games, and Swansea don't concede goals. So, and you do feel Norwich, of those three teams, are probably the most likely to have an off day, but they're probably the most likely to win eye-catching. They're probably the most likely to thump someone 7-0 and then go and lose 2-0 the following week, because I think they can have off nights, especially when they don't have Buendia, who's so important to them. But on this game, they didn't really threaten that much. I thought they lost the midfield battle a little bit. I think that blend of when everyone's fit, having Smith, Hourihane and Grimes is going to be fantastic. But having obviously that wasn't how they lined up at the weekend. Smith's injured at the moment. But yeah, there's a lot to like about Swansea. I do find myself, I just admire the job that Steve Cooper's done, as I've said a few times on the pod, especially in the last few weeks, having Tom on last week. Uncharacteristic error, that's how I get my teeth in, for the opener from Tim Krul. And as I say, they really missed Buendia, who was suspended. And those red cards from Buendia are starting to be a little bit of a problem for Swansea, because they really miss him when they're not playing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And obviously we know what a fantastic player he is and how important he is to that Norwich team. But at the end of the day, Norwich have still got a lot of talented players within that team that have got to step up when he's not there. I know obviously he's such a creative influx on pretty much everything that they do, whether he gets the goal, gets the assist. But they've got players within that team that should be stepping up to the plate when he's absent. And Timu Pukki's found goals hard to come by in recent weeks. Jordan
Hugo. They've come in gluts, haven't they, Pukki? Seems like, is it like 6-4 and then not scored for five games and things like that? He's been on streaky runs, hasn't he?
He has, and it's unusual for him because he's normally the man that you associate that he's going to score every single weekend. But for him this season, it's just coming dribs and drabs, and it's quite a surprise. And Daniel Farker, even though I don't think he'll be overly concerned by it, he's probably thinking to himself, what have I got to do to just try and get that confidence back within him and get him firing a little bit more consistently? But like I've said a few minutes ago, I think with the fact that Swansea are winning games consistently now, not conceding goals, and just look a fantastic footballing side, just like the way they get the ball down on the floor, knock it around, and just make life so awkward for teams. And then you've got Brentford. I'm sorry to Norwich, but if you can go on a run of 20 games without defeat in this league, you deserve automatic promotion. And it's not just the fight with Brentford now. They're absolutely battering teams as well. 14 goals in three games in a week.
There's not many draws in that run either. There's not many draws. No. So to win the games, that's really impressive. I wonder on Pukki, just on that point, whether, because obviously Norwich are such heavy title favourites this time around and have led the table for so much of the season, teams obviously drop off, and you think how many times we saw Cantwell or Buendia get into those little pockets and slide balls through for Pukki to run into. I know he's not the quickest, but seemed to score a lot of goals last time as a Championship, and certainly in the early part of the season where he'd run onto through balls. And if teams are dropping off and playing deeper, then obviously that space isn't there for him. He has great movement in the box as well, but it's just not quite worked out for him so far. But very interesting. It's going to be really tight. And as I say, there's three really good teams going for automatic promotion. I still feel in my heart of hearts that I think Swansea might fall away of the two. And I predicted Brentford and Norwich at the start of the season. And if you put a gun to my head, I think that's the two I would stick with now. But I love Swansea. I would like Swansea to go up, I think, the most, because I just enjoy what they've done and what they've done there. But if I'm sticking my neck on the line, I think I'm going Norwich and Brentford still. What about you, if I put a gun to your head?
Well, I just think at the minute, obviously, Norwich are having a little bit of a blip. Every team in this league has one at some stage. So it's hard because we know what a good side they are on the day. We know how much damage they can do to opponents. But I just really, really fancy Brentford and Swansea to get the job done this year, because Brentford are just... The word for Brentford is quite simply relentless. They are just relentless. They game after game, you know they're going to score goals. They've got the best striker in the league who cannot stop scoring. Swansea have got an absolutely superb defence. They've got such a structure in place. They've got a brilliant manager. And for me, as I've said, I think both of them, they're the best entertaining sides to watch as well. I love watching them play. I think it will boil down between those three, though. But I do fancy Brentford and Swansea to get there just ahead of them. But obviously, we know in this league, things can change very quickly. I don't think, realistically, though, just yet, you can rule Reading out of the race, because the gap's only 6 points. Things can change very quickly. But for me, if you're putting the gun to my head, it's got to be Brentford and Swansea for the top two. But don't ask me, I'll go up as champions. I've not worked that one out yet.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
To round off this week's podcast, we're going to finish off with our shocks and bankers for the upcoming matches. There are three games in midweek, but as always, we're going to keep our eyes looking ahead to the weekend action. So, George, what have you gone for this weekend?
Well, I think, once again, there's some very tight ones to call and some that you wouldn't like to say. But in terms of a banker, I'm probably getting a little bit boring with this and boring everyone to death, but I've got to go with Brentford again. I just can't see them not keeping this run going. Home game against Barnsley. Even though Barnsley have had a decent season, not played at the weekend because the game was called off, so they'll be fresh and ready and raring to go. But, of course, they've got Chelsea midweek, in fact, in the FA Cup, so that could have a waiting on proceedings. But Brentford, I just can't see anybody laying a glove on them at the minute, and they're at home. They've only ever lost one game in their new stadium in the league. So going for Brentford for my banker this weekend. In terms of a shock, I'm gonna go against the league table, as we often do with these, and I'm going to go for Nottingham Forest to beat Bournemouth. And obviously, Bournemouth have not been in the best of form, but they are still much higher in the table than Forest are. And Forest are slowly starting to get to grips with life under Chris Hughton. They've turned the screw a little bit. Obviously, brought Glenn Murray in, a couple of goals at the weekend. I think he'll be key in their fight against survival. And like I say, Chris Hughton's slowly starting to have the impact there that you would have expected him to earlier on. So, for me, I'm going to go with Forest as the shock this weekend and Brentford the banker.
Yep, good shout. Really good win for Forest against Wickham. I know against Wickham, albeit, and Wickham's form is pretty dreadful, but Glenn Murray in the goals, which is big for them because Lewis Grabban's really struggled. For my shock and banker, I'm going to go with Swansea to beat Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough as my banker, just because of how good they are defensively. I know Wednesday are in decent form at the minute. They've got a big game against Wickham, which you would have them down as favourites for, definitely. But for me, given how good Swansea are defensively and how it's offensively that Sheffield Wednesday struggle, I think Swansea, if they score one goal, then Wednesday aren't going to score two, especially against this back line. So I'm going for Swansea to win at Hillsborough as my banker. And my shock, Derby to beat Borough at Derby. Derby's home form is really good at the minute, which is a weird one because it was obviously so poor at the start of the season. But they're picking up decent results at the minute. Middlesbrough's form's really, they're struggling at the minute. Lost 4-1, obviously, to Brentford at the weekend. And they've had a bit of a dip despite having a really good deadline day and a good January window, generally speaking, for them. So hopefully they'll, for Neil Warnock's sake, they'll go on to improve and strength to strength. But for me, I think for definite that Derby will get that one as a shock. So Swansea to win at Wednesday and Derby to beat Borough at home. And that rounds off this week's episode of the Championship Chat podcast. Thank you, as always, for your support. And if you did enjoy this podcast, please do subscribe and share to help us reach as many new listeners as possible. You can support this podcast now with our new Ko-fi page, where you can make a one-off donation of just £3 towards the help to help us continue to bring weekly podcasts to you. As always, your support is very much appreciated, and you can find links to our Twitter and Instagram pages, as well as the Ko-fi page at Champ Chat Pod. Thank you for choosing us and tuning in this week. We'll be back again in 7 days to digest more championship action, and we'll catch you then.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.